Demetrios Castares, popularly known as El Griego Rumbero, the Greek rumba player, leads the Latin Jazz Coalition with this number called Trombón con Sazón, meaning trombone with seasoning, with flavor. He also has Steve Glusband on trumpet, Oscar Hernandez on piano, and Mario Rodriguez on percussion. This is from their 2000 album titled Trombón con Sazón. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we have so much to cover today. So let's get started. Joining us is a very familiar voice. He has been here for years now, and we have been following just one story. Just one. It concerns the Bill and Hillary and Chelsea Clinton Foundation and a number of irregularities that have been occurring at the foundation for many years. In fact, Charles Ortel, who blew the lid on Wall Street in about 2008, 2009, when he exposed that several Wall Street firms, Wall Street traded firms, had illegally been inflating the value of their stock, most notably General Electric. So he took this on, he retired, he became a financial investigator on his own, and decided to devote himself to looking into charity fraud. And the Clinton Foundation was the first major, I should say, major issue that he decided to follow through on, and it just kept, it just kept giving and giving and giving more reason for him to just devote his entire full time to just researching that. And we've talked about the Clinton Foundation and many aspects of the Clinton Foundation on this program. Exposing some very alarming ways in which this foundation functioned and continues still to function, and there's no explanation as to why. We have not had a full and open investigation of the type that one would expect when hundreds, in fact, I would say billions of dollars, not hundreds of millions, but billions of dollars are involved and mysteriously disappear. Charles, thanks for being with us today.
My great pleasure, Eutrice. Thanks for having me back on.
Well, I do seem to remember you, although you've been lost in the books. You've been doing quite a lot of work. Tell us what is the latest that you're going to be concentrating on?
Sure. Well, thanks so much. What I've been doing is reducing thousands of pages of documents to low hundreds of pages of exhibits each, going through the 56 different areas that I see are centrally involved in the Clinton Foundation fraud, laying it out for ultimately, I hope, for investigators and prosecutors and others to study, so that we can expose the many contours, the full contours of this tapestry, so that people over time will learn that even the most powerful people among us, and perhaps especially the most powerful people among us, former presidents, aspiring presidents, former attorneys general and governors, big businessmen, big foundations, cannot deceive the public and get money out of taxpayer hands, send it towards causes that sound appealing on paper, but allow those same billions, tens of billions, maybe hundreds of billions, to disappear into the dirty pockets of dirty politicians and dirty business people around the world, as I believe has happened with this Clinton Foundation fraud empire. And what I would caution the audience, people ask me, I have my own podcast show. We did our 164th two-hour podcast yesterday on Sunday. And people, some critics say, well, geez, Charles, I mean, you've been at this for a long time, indeed over 4 years. How come there haven't been any convictions? Well, that started to change. And one good sign of it was Friday, when the Department of Justice put out an announcement that several business people connected to Haiti had agreed to plead guilty to violations involving a charity, a fake charity up in Maryland, and a crooked scheme to get $84 million approved towards a supposed port project in Haiti that needed to get blessed by corrupt politicians, so bribes needed to be arranged. And the business people who were involved in that crooked project apparently pled guilty in something that was announced by the Department of Justice on Friday. Now, this $84 million scheme is bad enough, but in the context of the more estimated $10 billion that was raised from the international community, roughly $10 billion, around January, on and after January 2010, when that earthquake hit the impoverished nation, getting excited about $84 million, it's a large amount of money, is one thing. But what we really should be more excited about is what happened to the $10 billion, and how come Bill Clinton and the former president of Haiti are so unwilling to allow for a proper accounting of what happened to all that money. I think that the Department of Justice, and specifically in, I believe, Washington, D.C. and in Massachusetts, in league with U.S. attorneys up there, would have put the kind of effort that you can see in the public indictments, superseding indictments, and other information that's all online. They put that kind of information into this $84 million sliver. They're definitely looking at the Clinton Foundation, Clinton Bush Haiti Fund. They have to. And they have to look at other aspects of this. And it's one thing for me to get on your show and say, I believe as a private citizen, somebody who's studied the record, that crimes have been committed. I have every right to say that, especially as I do believe that to be the case. But it's yet another thing for government authorities to mount a case, convene a grand jury, get an indictment, get then jurors in front of the trial, and convince to whatever legal standard, whether it's preponderance of evidence or beyond a reasonable doubt, or some other standard, convince the jury that the defendants are in fact guilty, and then motivate the judge to hand down the appropriate kind of sentence. That's a big process, particularly when it involves people, even today, are pounding the table, suggesting that maybe Hillary should be a viable candidate for president in the 2019-2020 cycle. So it's a tough task. This is a long project. This charity began October 23rd, 1997. There are tens of thousands of pages in the public record. Not everybody is as interested as I am in going through all those pages and trying to figure out what the financial side of them tell you. But I believe enough people have stuck their noses into this, and enough governments are looking at it around the world that, and I think the presidential election contest in 2020 is going to very much hinge on matters that are related to this Clinton Foundation fraud, and the willingness of so many and so many governments inside and outside this country to allow the fraud to flourish and to resist doing what is the obvious step, and that is to appoint a conservator to sit atop this fraud, to stop the solicitation, to make proper filings on what really happened, and then to go through the laborious forensic accounting that's required here to figure out how much money was stolen by which people when.
Well, let's deal with that for a minute. Let's take a look at where the Clintons are for a moment. It seemed for a while that they slipped under the radar. They didn't show up anywhere. They weren't being very public. there were other things going on, including a demand to know what happened to all those emails, a demand to know what happened to the private server that she installed, Hillary Clinton installed in her home, and other people had access to highly confidential materials, and what they were doing with them, we don't know. There are other questions still hanging over her head with regard to Benghazi. That has not come to fruition. We don't know where that, there was a hearing held, as you know, and we don't know what happened to it after the hearing. So they had that their book published. It tanked. The response from the public was not as they had predicted. And we're seeing signs that the luster that they thought they had has greatly diminished, which might explain their decision to lay low. But we can't really understand why everything seemed to have gone dead. It seemed to me, from the materials that you generated, which coincided with what the FBI had generated, it seemed to me that this would have been a very hot case to pursue. What accounts for the fact that there was a backing off, it seems, on the Clintons and their foundation?
Well, I think, you know, in time we're going to know the full story. But my working hypothesis is the following, that sometime, and it could be going way back, but let's say sometime in the Clinton presidency, people in the security services, the many agencies, the FBI, et cetera, became aware that the Clintons had been involved in a massive criminal, set of criminal enterprises centered on Arkansas. I mean, there were multiple different investigations. They then watched as the Clintons arrived in Washington, D.C., and proceeded to monetize the White House with the Lincoln bedroom, overnight stays, and the coffees, and the illegal fundraising, all that kind of stuff. And I don't know if we'll ever find this out with the kind of specificity I'd like to see, but somewhere buried in the FBI's files are evidence, meeting notes or evidence, that the people in the FBI really understood just how bad this was. And perhaps people in the CIA understood it as well. And there was a back and forth, and ultimately it was decided, let's leave the guy in there, but let him know that we know what he's up to. And then, you know, as the, this is a working hypothesis that I'm running with, and supposition. Then the tools of technology started to become way more powerful. In 1993, yeah, there was a DARPANET, but there was no consumer internet. Then the internet, you know, was principally landline based and very slow under Clinton's presidency. But when George W. got in there, he arrived with other baggage that the security services were able to hold perhaps over his head. And then again, the tools of technology got ever more powerful. And suddenly, you and I and anybody else who's on Facebook or Twitter, I'm not sure you, Teresa, you are on Facebook, but unfortunately I am.
No, I'm not. I used to be once upon a time, but years ago I dumped it.
But those of us who use the internet, who use Google, who are on Facebook or Twitter, or you know, using Google Chrome and cell phones or whatever, we have put a tremendous amount of personal information online that the security services has had access to, and they can use it for nefarious purposes, to hold it over your head, to weave a tale. And these powers have gotten ever more concentrated in the hands of fewer and fewer people ever since January 2001. So there has evolved a system where we believe, and this cuts across the political spectrum, you know, I come at issues, economic issues, from decidedly a right-leaning approach, but on the issue of national security and personal freedom inside the United States of America, I stand with progressives and others who believe that individual liberties are very important and that the state should not be vacuuming up our activities to then use them as a lever against us outside by extra-constitutional means. We are innocent until proven guilty in this country. So, in theory. So, along the way, these security services got more and more files together, the political guys got more and more files together, and I suspect that what happened was by June of 2008, at that fateful dinner or meeting at Senator Feinstein's house, which is a matter of public record, right before the Bilderberg meeting, a deal was cut between Team Obama and Team Clinton as to how the Obama presidency would function and how Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation would function during that presidency. If that deal may have been an oral understanding, it may have been reduced to writing, but it was a deal that I think explains why the Obama administration would tolerate the gross abuses of the law that the Clintons perpetrated as they illegally conspired with the Obamas to get her confirmed as Secretary of State without disclosing the true state of the Clinton Foundation, that it was then a gross violation of all relevant laws and should have been wound up well before Hillary was Secretary of State January 21st, 2009, that a deal was cut allowing the Clinton Foundation to function as a slush fund, the way it did function, but leaving it open, not enforcing strict rules about making sure that you only follow purposes for which a foundation is authorized, not enforcing strict rules on how you open bank accounts up, how you wire money back and forth, how you account for things, and allowing 100% of Hillary Clinton's government business to be conducted over unsecure, I jokingly refer to as the toilet bowl server system, up in Chappaqua, down in that mansion in D.C. that they have, over unsecure devices, using alias emails, and then retaining custody control of all of this U.S. property until early December 2014, when some portion of the property was sent back to the State Department via one of Hillary Clinton's law firms, Williams & Connolly. That is just so far away from what the law, as I understand it, as lawyers explained to me, states you have to do when you operate the Secretary of State Department, that it suggests several things. It suggests that, on the one hand, if they were going to be this sloppy with state, how sloppy were they with HEW? How sloppy were they with Defense Department and other parts of the federal government? How sloppy were they in letting contracts out? How endemic was this practice? How many people used alias emails and unsecure devices? And for that matter, what about Barack Obama and his team, his close team? Did they use unsecure service and alias emails? Do we even know that we have all of the presidential records that were created under Barack Obama's presidency? I suggest that we don't have them. And so the Clintons got away with this not by accident. There has to be a reason. And I think the reason is it was part of a deal with Barack Obama. And this would explain, Barack Obama or his people, this would explain the assault against Donald Trump, the continuing assault against Donald Trump, and the fear and shock that Donald Trump won. Because in October, I believe, of 2016, Hillary is quoted as saying the fact that, you know, we've got to win, otherwise we're all going to hang. So as a working hypothesis, I believe that many people knew about this scheme, many people gained from this scheme, and many people fully expected that Donald Trump would be taken out in an October surprise, that Hillary Clinton would be able, as president for two terms, to cover this all up, bury it where the sun doesn't shine. But that didn't happen. And so now we're more than 2 years into this. I guess we're 2.5 years into this process. And I submit to you that a lot of people have been talking. A lot of people who know a lot of damaging information have already been talking. And the game that is afoot here is not to let the Clintons get away, as is per normal, with a, you know, taking the rap for a small piece of the criminal conspiracy. the game here is to get as much of it as possible and as many co-conspirators as possible. So one has to be thorough. And I believe people are being really, really thorough. And I'm hopeful, for many reasons, that we're going to have some success here, that charity land will be reformed, taken into a new regime that suits the 21st century and the more powerful technology tools that we do have, that charity dollars, which are given freely by many, many people, some who shouldn't be giving money away but should be saving it for themselves, but selflessly nonetheless give it away, that these charity dollars will get spent a lot more effectively, that will cut the politicians and the cronies out of the crooked charity business, and will actually get money back from these crooks who have been illegally diverting tens of billions, perhaps hundreds of billions or trillions of dollars from the needy causes that still need to be addressed today.
Well, there are many, many things that need to be addressed that went unaddressed under the Obama administration and continue to be unaddressed up until now. Let me just pause for a minute and ask about the Obama connection. Do you think this is one of the reasons that Barack Obama, having left the White House, has maintained a very low profile?
I do think so. I mean, I think that while Barack Obama was president, he was poorly served by his political cronies who did not set the Barack Obama Foundation up properly. It was sloppily done. It was done at a time when everyone assumed that there would be a friendly successor to Barack Obama who would protect it. But the filings in whatever years, and I think it started in 14 or thereabouts, those filings, 14 forward, are a joke. And I did contact them, and I did speak to them and suggest that there was a way to correct them, and, of course, they didn't listen to me. So I think that whatever the Clintons got away with, the team Obama thought, you know, we can do a lot more than they did. And they watched. They saw in the Clintons economically bankrupt people leave the White House under an actual investigation by the FBI, which began February 15, 2001, into the Clinton Foundation, and nonetheless turn around being bankrupt, paying off all their debts quickly in 2001, and then rocketing into fame with big book deals and speaking deals, business deals, and whatever. And that was 2001. Bill was just, you know, he was just a president. He wasn't the first African-American president. So they saw, you know, a land rush gold mine business here, and the precedent had been set that it's okay to milk a presidential foundation for personal and political gain, and they set off rushing down a road thinking they'd get away with it. And, you know, I really do think we have to, there's some big questions that have to be asked here. I'm not against the notion that presidential pay should be much higher than it currently is. I'm even not against the idea that a president should get a very large pension afterwards. But what I am 1,000% against is the notion that supporters of a given president, be they Republicans, Democrats, or independent, should go down a path of creating a new institution, yet another stupid library that has to be heated and cooled, when, after all, the trend is not putting up new buildings for documents. But anyway, yet another expensive, environmentally damaging building to house records that are actually the property of we the people, not the president. And then to use this edifice or this organization as a means to garner book deals and speaking deals and now Netflix deals and other deals, that is not right. You know, that is not, you know, we shouldn't be setting up a system that supposed public servants are nothing more than infomercial people who, you know, walk the walk, talk the talk, act as president, but really do it so that in their retirement, their post-presidencies, these young presidents, post-presidents, can become worth hundreds of millions or billions of dollars. There's something badly wrong with that. You're not actually a public servant when you go down that route. You're doing it for the wrong reasons. And as you say, Barack Obama actually, in hindsight, did not get a lot good accomplished as president. I mean, we could talk about lots of different things, nor did George W. Bush, nor did Bill Clinton. There were lots of things that should have been done and have not been done, and our country is now in debt to the tune of more than $22 trillion. while these presidents, former presidents, are milking their years of public service for their personal and political benefit. There's something badly wrong with that. I'd much rather say, all right, you want to be president? The current salary is $450,000. The average CEO of a big company makes $20 million a year. We'll pay you $20 million a year. And you get a pension of $2 million a year, whatever the number is. The only thing is, you can't do any speeches. You can't, you know, you can't write books about your presidential records. And you can't engage in politics after you're president. You know, maybe you have to do something like that.
Well, this is a criminal matter. No matter how you look at it, it's a criminal issue. The foundation has been used in such a way, it was set up in such a way to conduct illegal business that directly benefited the Clintons. It derived a great deal of money for the Clintons. And nobody knows where the money went. Not even foreign governments that had begun to demand answers. And they still haven't gotten them. But the interesting thing is that the foreign governments that donated billions of dollars to the Clinton Foundation are now asking the question themselves, because they're being pressed by their individual governments to get an answer to all these missing millions and millions and millions of dollars just handed to the Clinton Foundation. What is the status of this effort to get definitive answers for the money that many of these foreign governments handed over to the Clinton Foundation?
Great. Well, I'll try to answer that question. So the approach that I've been taking, because I'm just one dude here in Manhattan, and this is a big problem, was to reach out to people I trust around the world who typically are nationals of the country that may have given, believed it gave money towards the Clinton Foundation, to enlist the aid of those nationals to find local journalists and others in a position who can then press the local governments for answers. That's a process that I started in 2016. It takes a while. In the beginning, particularly during 2016, the foreign nationals and governments were reluctant to challenge the Clintons because they assumed that Hillary would win. And then there was all the chatter about, you know, Trump's going to be impeached and the Mueller report's going to bring him down. So they were less interested before Mueller did release his findings and really stepping the pressure up. But I can say that what I believe is the case is that, and I'm not going to say which of these governments, but governments and people close to governments in the following countries have been following this extremely closely. Australia, Canada, France, UK, New Zealand, Sweden, Norway, and I could go on. In addition, authorities at the federal and state level in the United States have been looking at this very carefully. So the international scam, it's useful to talk about it. I'm writing this book, as I mentioned, and I'm thinking of calling one chapter The Art of the Steal, as opposed to The Art of the Deal, which is Trump's book. But The Art of the Steal is to tell a government that you're going to do a project that sounds appealing, you know, fight climate change or fight HIV/AIDS or whatever. And typically what the government comes back and says is, all right, we'll give you a certain dollar amount, but we don't want our contribution to be any more than X percent of the total amount spent on this effort, and we want you to get an independent accounting firm to prove that our money was spent the way you say it was supposed to be spent, right? And I have been submitting, I've been stating publicly for some time that is the norm, because I know that's the norm. And it's only been recently that I have now come to see materials that were sent by the Clinton Foundation back to some governments, I'm not going to say which ones, which prove my suspicion 100% correct. The Clinton Foundation, and I'm not going to name names of those individuals because I hold all the trustees of the Clinton Foundation responsible for the illegal acts of these various people, they use the Clinton playbook, which has two main planks. The first plank is to lie under oath. Mill did that. You know, he's disciplined for doing that while president. And if you're a famous person, you're prepared to hold up your right hand or left hand and lie under oath, thinking that no one will challenge you and that prosecutors will never go after you, that's a pretty bold thing to do, particularly as a former president or aspiring president. And then the second plank of the Clinton-Obama plan is then to obstruct justice, that put people inside, whether it be the IRS, the Justice Department, or elsewhere, and make sure that your allies do not allow any case to move forward. So when I look at these grant documents, what I see is the very beginning, and it's a standard approach of any business deal to say in the first paragraph who the parties are. And typically we'll say donor A is, you know, whatever government is one party, and whatever piece of the Clinton Foundation will say, you know, the Clinton HIV AIDS initiative is a duly established initiative of the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation under their what's called employer identification number 31-1580204. You make a representation at the beginning of a contract that the document is between these two parties. You make all these recitals, and then you sign. The only problem is that in the case of the Clinton Foundation HIV/AIDS Initiative or the Clinton Climate Initiative or the Clinton Global Initiative or any other initiative of the Clinton Foundation, none of those things were ever duly established charities. So these documents, which governments have been getting back, which were typically sent either by mail or email, progress reports which governments might get from individuals, are progress reports from individuals who may not know the law. Typically, they're volunteers or young people, and they're just, you know, starry-eyed. They're inclined to believe whatever the Clintons say to them. But they make these representations in the names of entities that don't legally exist from offices that are not legally registered in the state or commonwealth of inside the United States repeatedly in a pattern of practice that began starting in 2001 or thereabouts. So there are many, many examples. And, you know, a moral of this story, I think, is that the arrogance of the Clintons knew no bounds. And they felt they could hide behind this charity, that nobody would question the charity. What they didn't understand, I guess, is that charities do have to issue records. They do have to hold on to records. And if you want to resist being prosecuted for charity fraud, what you have to accomplish is the impossible. You have to control the Justice Department and the IRS forever, and that's nothing happens forever. And records of these charities, as I say, are voluminous. Many, many donors kept records. Many donor governments have to keep extensive records. The charities themselves have to file records. And these records, many of them are in the public domain.
We have here a pretty, when you think about it, in terms of the brilliance, a devious brilliance, you have two people, a president, one who was Secretary of State. They're seasoned political animals. They know how this process works. And they are excellent at using the process to their own advantage. They form a coterie of other people around them. They initiate them into the same kind of practice. And so you have a secret society headed, of course, by the Clintons. But you find that it keeps widening and widening, and it is incomprehensible to me that a country known for its investigative powers and its, the way it can unravel things at this level of crime, we're talking billions of dollars here, that nobody to this day in the government who's supposed to look at these things, in the Justice Department, or in any other department charged with overseeing criminal activity, that we haven't seen or heard of any sustained effort to understand this foundation the IRS, other people. We haven't seen that. Why do you think that is?
Well, if I may, one crucial element here that we need to study a little bit is the role that accountants play in this. So what the Clintons are expert at doing, and it's a trick other fraudsters use, is to stop questions from being answered. What you claim is you claim, well, look, I have this independent accounting firm over here. They studied it, and they issued a report saying everything was fine. And because most people, particularly most journalists, are not really interested in numbers, they hear that, and they say, yeah, that sounds reasonable. An accounting firm issued a report. They checked it out. Must be right. Well, what if the accounting firm's crooked? Or what if the people in that accounting firm are prepared to be crooked? And here I would call out BKD, which is an accounting firm, I think it's headquartered in Missouri, but its Arkansas office was centrally involved in perpetrating this fraud, in my view. And then people at PwC, a large firm, particularly their New York and Washington, D.C. and Little Rock offices, and then people at the firm of Cohn Resnick, which took over from PwC. And then there are, on the international side, what governments will do is they'll say, we want to get an international accounting firm to cross-check this. So there's a firm called KPMG. There are actually very few firms left that have the reach to do this that will sit over the grant that gets sent, let's say, from a Norway down to pick a country, say it's Tanzania. The money will get overseen by KPMG, and KPMG will write a report saying everything's hunky-dory, when in fact it isn't hunky-dory. So this whole process of going and examining what actually happened to the tens of billions of dollars that governments around the world gave to the Global Fund or UNITAID or the Clinton Foundation or you name it, for all these high-sounding projects to fight AIDS and malaria and tuberculosis and climate change and poverty and whatever. No one's actually doing the type of work that you need to do to check and see what truly happened to the money. And why is no one really doing that work? Because when an ocean of money is not going to be regulated in the first place, people can readily become corrupted, particularly if they get a sliver of that money or if they get something as valuable as being able to market to the world. You know, when the UN needs a complex problem overseas, they choose PwC or KPMG or whatever else, and that helps them get the assignment, for example, of maybe auditing General Electric and collecting $100 million a year for doing that. So there's no real effective oversight of the accounting profession. And this is, or any of these professions, consulting, accounting, legal, et cetera, they're all self-regulating. And they've been at this for a long time, and it's going to prove to be extremely embarrassing, if not criminally damaging, to many folks who've been so centrally involved in this mushrooming fraud. So I think part of the answer to why we haven't gotten the type of granular explanation of truly what happened is that high-level people are not in the business of indicting themselves.
In the end, is this foundation system well-regulated, or is it understood to be a tool of whichever political party is in office?
Yeah, it's the foundation system. I mean, there are many, many foundations that take the rules seriously and are well-run. The overwhelming majority of them are such. But the last time foundation laws were adjusted comprehensively in the United States was 1969. It's a long time ago. A lot has changed. And, the tendency, this is going back into the infancy of foundations at the beginning. You know, folks who had a rather bad name, let's say the Rockefellers, Carnegie and others, whitewashed their names by creating these foundations. And, a lot of them did good works. But it's a natural thing for people who've gotten away with, let's say, on-the-edge behavior, massed gigantic fortunes, to say, maybe to just tamp down public opinion and get on the right side of everybody, maybe I'll give a portion of my wealth away. And, people will feel better and ignore what I did in the past. The ability of people, you take Zuckerberg, Facebook, these young people, to create in my view, highly questionable near monopolies that are not effectively regulated in a rapid period of time is testament to the dangers of allowing the present rickety system of regulation involving charities to continue as it has in the past. It's well past time for meaningful change that puts people on notice that charity really needs to be done carefully. There aren't that many great causes. In fact, there's too much money sloshing around claiming that it's attacking a limited number of causes, and not enough of that money gets to the intended recipients. Too much of it goes to fancy overhead, disappears, goes to politicians' pockets. And because the IRS, I would argue, has been purposely gamed, it doesn't have enough people in the charity regulation department, it doesn't audit enough of them. This has been going on for way too long, and it needs to stop. It needs to be changed.
Well, we're seeing in the open Donald Trump just conducting business in a most irregular way, assuming that he could do anything, that he's not bound by laws. We have clear conflicts of interest. We have cronyism. We have, the president business side continues apace with his presidency. And we have seen many instances in which one is influenced by the other. So it's not a Democrat thing. It's everybody into the pool doing whatever it is they want to do. How do just regular people, members of Congress, don't seem too enthusiastic about taking on the issue? Certainly the IRS and other organizations that are set up to monitor the activities of charities and foundations, they're not doing the job. So what is left as a method or some kind of way to keep track of the functioning of foundations, many of which may be totally illegal and actually committing crimes right under our noses?
Well, I think that what we have, actually there are ways to discipline these foundations, and it takes some time to do it. And those ways have been in progress. We'll see what truly happens in the end here, whether the swamp is so powerful that it's able to stop a long overdue cleansing and reorganizing of the machinery that's supposed to regulate these charities. But there are state actions that are possible. There are federal actions that are possible that individuals can take against these charities. It's possible to push governments to move. We do have an election coming up. And with public outcry, it is quite possible that things will happen the way Hemingway once talked about. You know, how do you go bankrupt? I think in The Old Man and the Sea, the answer was slowly then suddenly. And similarly, in this matter, to reopen all these wounds and get to the truth of what has been going on, as you rightly say, by politicians in both parties over decades, is going to be a very embarrassing process. But on the one hand, it'll be embarrassing on the one hand, but on the other hand, what it's going to do is it's going to, I think, if we do it correctly, it's going to change the balance of power in favor of do-gooders, in favor of people who truly want to help. It is going to encourage that money is really flows to these good projects. And by punishing charity fraudsters, especially the high and mighty charity fraudsters, it's going to tip the balance back towards the place where it should be, where people who are engaged in this noble process of trying to help others selflessly and quietly, not virtue signaling, not taking credit for their good works, just doing good works and truly trying to help people lift themselves up, the disadvantaged among us, and righting wrongs inside and outside this country. That's an endeavor that should be encouraged, and should be done only responsibly. And, you know, I submit to you that the an interest around the world is rising in this and will accelerate once the first foreign government donor stands up and says, God damn it, give me my money back. This is a total fraud. How could you do this? And does it in a way where they embarrass politicians in the donor government country, as well as others around the world who may have been perpetrating these frauds. I see a call for action happening quietly, and I think I see signs of progress on a daily basis. I can't predict when it's going to come to the fore, but I'm hopeful that we're going to see justice prevail here in a time frame that will predate the November 2020 election.
Well, you see, because there are other aspects that we haven't gotten into in this discussion, but that are very, very real. You take Haiti, for example, and what the Clinton Foundation did there, including interfering in the actual formation of a government, getting exclusive rights to resources that it should not have had exclusive rights to. We're talking bribery of a massive order. And then you see the other side of it. The country is in disarray. It is out of control. And the Clintons so far have been exempt from any link to any of this fallout. Although, in fact, they were. We still have the $10 billion in housing money that was given to the foundation to help rebuild after the 2010 earthquake, and the people keep asking, where's the money? You have economic development funds that came in for economic development. So it is not just about a foundation serving as the overarching centerpiece, as the engine of a criminal enterprise. We also have to look at how the foundation actually is to be accountable for all these internal problems that were caused by the stealing or the disappearance of all this aid.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the situation in Haiti is sadly part of a template that, you know, you find a cause in a foreign nation where there is no law, there is no justice, there's no ability inside that nation to find out what truly happened to the money. You make sure, as Clinton did, that you're signed up to work with a former president under a UN mandate, so you insulate yourself, in theory, from any kind of scrutiny by U.S. authorities. And you divert as much of that money as possible. And, I mean, that's behavior that is, I mean, murder is bad, but I would argue this is right up there with that. I mean, this is reprehensible behavior as a former president. I would understand some gangbanger trying to do this, but a person who had been elected and reelected as president of the United States, who then actually expected to be living again in the White House as the first laddie, must be held to account with this type of reprehensible behavior, because it happened not just in Haiti. It happened in Papua New Guinea. It happened across Africa. It happened in parts of Asia, South America. They purposely seem to have picked projects in places around the world where there is, let's just put it charitably, little law and no order, only disorder. But an appealing, you know, landscape can be painted about why these people in this country needed billion here or 500 million there or 200, whatever the number was, and then you just insert yourself between the cash machine and the project, and you divert as much money coming out of the cash machine as possible. You find crooked accountants to paper it over for you, and you wash, rinse, and repeat. You do it over, 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 and over again. And there's, as I said in the beginning, this is a pattern of practice that started on October 23rd, 1997, and it has continued to this day, 22 years later.
As part of the science of this, to use a better, to, this is the only word I can think of at the moment, because it is a science. It is a studied way of looting money that should go to really worthy causes. Is it part of it the assumption that people would find it very hard to believe that a president of the United States, a Secretary of State of the United States, people of such high office, couldn't possibly do these kinds of illegal things? And it must be some other kind of mistake. Maybe it's an accounting mistake. Maybe it's an organizational problem. But they're not ready to receive the truth that at the center of this, in fact, they designed it. These people designed this system so that they could make tons and tons of money for many generations. Chelsea Clinton doesn't have to worry about where her income will be coming from for many years, and her children, if she has children who might be inclined to do this kind of work. But do you think that's part of the calculation, that people would be extremely reluctant, and governments would be extremely reluctant, even though you say, of course, several of them are looking into this now and demanding answers. But on the whole, people would be extremely reluctant to accept criminality in a world that is predicated on charity.
Yeah, I do. I think that when people talk about fraudsters, and unfortunately I've been studying fraudsters for a while now, and your first inclination is to say that anybody who would commit fraud today is stupid. And the reality is that fraudsters, I would guess, or, you know, just thinking about not the moral character but the intellectual capacity, fraudsters are by definition very smart. And they search for opportunities like this, where the winnings that can be gotten in financial terms are so great, and where the chance of being caught is so low, that it makes sense to try to go down the path that the Clintons have gone on. And I started on October 23rd, with their record October 23, 1997 forward, but you can go further back than that. And what you see is that when people get away with criminal behavior, Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton are both lawyers. They minimum know the difference between crime and not crime. they may not know technical details anymore, but they certainly know basics. And, you know, you get away with a small crime, and you say, well, let's try a bigger one, and a bigger one, and a bigger one. And now they're at the intergalactic level. I mean, people around her are seriously trying to position Hillary Clinton in case the inevitable happens here in the Democratic field, shoots itself apart in this debate process. They're seriously trying to position Hillary Clinton as somebody who can swoop in at the last minute and rescue the Democratic Party when all other announced candidates fail, as I suspect could happen. They're even trying to position her now and faces everything we know. And it just tells me that some people will never change. Veteran fraudsters probably look at this and say, we're all going to die anyway. This is more fun than, you know, how I would otherwise live. What's the worst they could do to me? Have me die a year early? You know, and they just say, well, this is a lot more fun than staying home and baking cookies, as Hillary Clinton once famously said.
Well, we're wrapping up. What's on the international scene that we can look at as an indication that the fortunes of the Clintons are not as secure as they believe them to be?
Well, I would, you know, I mentioned a number of these countries, and there are others that have given money. And there are elections. There's a Brexit process going on in the UK, and elections there. There are elections in other countries. There have been elections recently in Australia. There's a rising tide of anti-corruption populism. And I think we're going to see over the course of this summer, recognizing that in Europe in particular, people take their vacations. I think you're going to see more and more signs each week of this conspiracy unraveling, of people who have been playing along and protecting Clinton saying, you know what, I'm not going to protect him any longer. And you're going to see, I think, multiple demands by foreign governments for their money back, and multiple perhaps media stories about it, and multiple explanations that will not hang together by the Clinton Foundation. And then that's before we get the Horowitz report. That's before we find out what's been happening with the IRS investigations, the FBI investigations, and the investigations into those investigations. So I think there's going to be a lot of news.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Charles, for joining us today. We have to end it here, but we'll pick it up again soon. Thanks a lot for being with us. Bye-bye.
Bye.